Money kept rolling out in all directions, to the poor, to the weak, to the destitute of all complexions. Now cynics claim a little of the cash has gone astray. But that's not the point, my friend. When the money keeps rolling out, you don't keep books. You can tell you've done well by the happy, grateful looks. Accountants only slow things down, figures get in the way. Never been a lady loved as much as ever.
Good evening, this is side two of tape 424, January 18, 1980. In the book Aftermath, there's a little sampling of the kind of wealth that Mr. Martin Bormann took to South America when he went down there in 1948. According to Fargo, he says, in quotes, gold became the first agenda. How much could the Nazis keep? How much could Eva Perón keep? And they go into the figure of valued in 1948 of $800 million. In those days, it was valued at that price. You take each one of those dollars and multiply it by two, and it's approximately $17 billion of gold that was sent down to South America that is somewhere today and very, very valuable and increasing in value. He took also diamonds, almost 5,000 carats of diamonds and other precious stones, and platinum in addition to the gold and sterlings, and $17 million U.S. dollars. In the Book of Records, I believe, there's a story of the greatest bank robbery in the world, and that was when the Russians and the Americans went into Germany. There was no money in the banks. It had all been removed. So Mr. Bormann went down to South America. There also, on page 247 of the book Aftermath, it tells in 1946, and that's the important year when our National Security Council was being formed. That was an important year in American congressional history. But there was a Senator Santander who was investigating Nazi money. You notice his name is around anymore. It's not a household word. He was probably on to something by 1946 when the war was over 1 year. And they were investigating the Bormann treasure. It was invested by the Freud Syndicate, F-R-E-U-D-E Syndicate. And there were approximately $400 million and another billion pesos. And it was put into 175 financial, commercial, industrial enterprises, 17 agricultural concerns, and 149 other companies. So actually, when World War II was over, there was unlimited money. We don't know whether these people own the radio stations that we can't talk on, whether they've paid the salaries of the newscasters that don't carry. The story, the biggest story, of course, has been the resurgence and continuation of the Nazis, and the one thing that is difficult to tie together in the radio or newspapers and so forth are these links. 175 financial, commercial, industrial enterprises, agricultural concerns, and so forth. These investments, according to Fargo, laid, in quotes, the foundation for an economic empire which gained tremendous impetus from Martin Bormann's arrival in Argentina. The money was set aside. By 1946, all of this money was missing. And the arrival, keep in mind, was arranged by the Perones in Argentina with the help of the Vatican, specifically Montini, Pope Paul VI, and that's why it's so important to get these threads today. They're not just names that leave off. Bormann was considered a financial wizard, and he was Hitler's secretary. He managed all of his finances, his personal money. He handled the finances of the Nazi Party from 1928 till 32, until it was elected into power. He was a very rich man. He owned, at the end of the war, in his name, all of Adolf Hitler's investments. That's interesting because if Hitler died, it all belonged to Martin Bormann. But if Hitler lived, you couldn't trace it to Hitler because it was in Martin Bormann's name. Every single piece of land and real estate, and there's a lot of that, was in the name of Martin Bormann. He held title to all of Hitler's real estate. There were 87 office buildings and property, which he continued to keep the wealth. There was a man named Carl Winkler who was involved with these funds of Bormann's starting in 1943 when the Nazis went underground and they were making arrangements to fund them overseas and give them businesses and agencies and agricultural farms and so forth. And this Carl Winkler left Martin Bormann and was going to work for another man by the name of Mr. Schwartz. and as soon as he left Bormann, he was instantly killed. There was another Dr. von Hummel who vanished with Martin Bormann, and he gave himself up May 21st, 1946. That was exactly a year after the war, and he surrendered, and he had with him $5 million worth of coins that belonged to Hitler, and he returned them, and he was released by the Germans after the war. He gave himself up, turned in the $5 million that he was to take in coins, and then he returned to practice law in Germany. Hitler had a tremendous bounty of the war German industry squeezed from the industrialists and given a large fortune, which again was put in the hands of Bormann, and they could project this into the future and take the money when the industries were left for the armies that arrived, English, Dutch, French, American, you know, whatever troops came in to Germany after the war. The bulk of the money had been removed and set aside as part of a post-war treasure. It was referred to as a Hitler bounty when Martin Bormann went into exile. Now, as soon as he got down to Argentina, he had held camp, according to Fargo, and he was meeting with thousands of personalities of the Third Reich. And in that time, he was 48 years old. So he was a very young man, actually, with millions and millions and billions of dollars of gold and going into the art treasures. But he assembled a whole new entourage, and he became the Führer. They called him the Führer in Argentine. A Colonel Rudel was there, whose name runs throughout the histories of Germany, Nazi Germany, and post-war Germany. Otto Skorzeny was there with him. That's the same Skorzeny I mentioned last week, who was a recipient of the great train robbery in Great Britain that continued to fund Skorzeny, whose idea it was to set up the network of Nazis after World War II. Skorzeny and Rudel and all of them were not only in Argentina, but later with Mengele's, Dr. Mengele's, down in Chile at Colonial Dignitat. That was recently exposed by Jack Anderson, and I've done tapes on Colonial Dignitat and the headquarters there. But Colonel Rudel, who was brought to the United States to our defense industries just recently, he was down there with Bormann and Otto Skorzeny, and they were holding meetings, thousands of personalities of the Third Reich, with the intent and unlimited money and headquarters and passports and ability to go back and forth to Germany to their old buddies and also travel all over South America and live with quite a bit of wealth and culture. Now, Fargo describes a chapter in his book, Aftermath. It's called Contours of the Third World. And this gets back to these international terrorists that have been arrested that are funding what we know traditionally as third world countries, which are violently anti-Semitic, that are arming for control and will combine with the major nations and be recognized by the major nations. It will just be a short time before this network of Nazism takes over. And what we think is the impoverished, the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, are just minute in comparison to the entire third world network. Now, he calls Fargo, who's written 17 books, well-known books. He wrote Game of the Foxes and Patton and many other books, describes what the Third World is actually the Third Reich. In his chapter, Contours of the Third World, you realize that it doesn't stand for the poor or the peasants or poverty. It stands for organized Minutemen, for gun running, narcotics traffic, coming out of Colombia or Turkey, Afghanistan, Southeast Asia. What we think of as the impoverished countries are very heavily into dealing with the gun runners, the assassins, and the Nazi money that has been poured into them, and they're buying their narcotics for specific purposes and incorporating them into this network of dependency, economic and psychological dependency. Fargo, when he wrote his book, said that there's no strong leader appearing among these people, that they're diverse at this point when he wrote Aftermath, that as of yet there was no main leader, even though Bormann was just 48 at the time. He wasn't going to surface as their physical leader. He just was responsible for allocating or distributing the funds that were taken from Germany. Aftermath was written in 1974. I would say that the strongest behind-the-scene leaders are the men I talk about all the time, Henry Kissinger, who I believe took a Jewish family, just as Martin Bormann took the name of Goldstein and a Jewish family from Poland, and Mr. Brzezinski, and Pope John Paul II. I think if there were three leaders to World War III who were behind the Nazi money and the links of Martin Bormann to the worldwide Nazi organization, which links to Reverend Moon and the Christian organizations and the Christian cult movements and so forth. I would say that the three front men behind the Nazification of the world in the last 20 years, 30 years, are Henry Kissinger, Mr. Brzezinski, and Pope John Paul II. He was very active organizing in Poland as a cardinal, and now as the Pope, he's very effectual in barraging, attacking Russia, leaving off the human rights in all the other countries where people are being killed like flies, and taking a backseat. These are the front leaders. They're not the Führers, but they're the fronts. Fargo said South America was getting together more Germans than there were in Germany, and the sudden upsurge of Nazism among fanatical youth began to appear at the time that Eichmann was arrested, kidnapped, and taken over to Israel for the trial. But the resurgence was beginning. As I say, Eva Perón met an early, untimely death. She had been to the Vatican to see the Pope. She had been to Spain to see Franco. She had been earlier to Italy to make arrangements for the Vatican to bring the man who was behind this mass of money that would be used all over the world. Fargo goes into the group in Chile, the ACHA, that bombed synagogues, community centers. But the Chilean Nazis were very noticeable and celebrating on the streets at the time that Allende was murdered and Pinochet was put into power in 1973. And, of course, Richard Nixon had Henry Kissinger, a German, allegedly a Jew, that I believe, again, is a Nazi, helped put the Nazi administration back into power. There were a lot of Nazis in Chile at the time of Allende, even though he was more liberal than Pinochet. They were very visible, but when he was killed, they really came out and celebrated. In Uruguay, there are a large group of people that attack Jewish schools, that have killed Jewish people there and bombed the Israeli ambassador's home and murdered a Jewish woman linked to the Eichmann kidnapping and so forth. In Brazil, the cemeteries are desecrated. There's demonstrations and vandalism. And, of course, in Chile, there's a colonial dignitat, the home and nesting place and recreation place of the Nazi organization down in Chile, where Perón and Otto Skorzeny and various Nazis and Mengeles, as I say, can meet in quiet, afforded diplomats, and have a good place to get together. Skorzeny built up his own anti-communist group, aided by Arab community down in South America. As the gold price goes up, and I might briefly mention, as gold goes to $700 or $800 an ounce and goes on up to $1,000 or $2,000, a large amount of gold was taken, as I said earlier on this tape, to South America. Bormann was taken to see the Grand Mufti and the Nazi connections in the Middle East before he went to South America. The Saudi Arabians and the wealthy oil people are buying up the gold as they take oil profits and put the oil profits into gold and not American dollars, than the original gold of the people that came from Germany and confiscated all the wealth of Europe is increased in value. So that I personally feel, I've mentioned this on the tapes, and I feel this, that the United States is a conquered country. That when Reinhard Gehlen was brought over here by John Foster Dulles, the head of the State Department, and Alan Dulles, who formed the CIA, that Gehlen was infiltrating a fifth column in the United States. The perversion of the newspapers, the media, the courts, the assassination teams were to be set up in the United States, and that whatever plans Hitler had for conquering the world or ruling the world were never properly exposed because they were transferred to the United States of America, and that we have been infiltrated, and with our own agreement, the people who could have stopped it never did. Going back to the book Aftermath, there are pages on that place, Colonial Dignitat. I've done three and more tapes on it, and I don't want to repeat those for you. But in 1963, according to Fargo, is when the Nazis got their new strength. The important years were 1947, 48, when the money was flown or taken by boats to South America, when Bormann arrived down there. In 1952, when Vita Perón died and the money was released to the world Nazi organizations. And in 1963, according to Fargo, is when the Nazis got new strength. Now, that is when Nazis were involved in the killing of John Kennedy and have affected all of our elections ever since. That is how I became involved in the Nazi connections, was studying the Warren Report and the a testimony of the witnesses and realizing the strong links of Lee Harvey Oswald to the Nazi community and the Central Intelligence Agency and Navy intelligence. A man named Franz Pfeiffer, P-F-E-I-F-F-E-R, was a man down in Argentina who began to track 10,000 or more Nazis in the year 1963. He even in 1968 had a Miss Nazi World, a beauty queen down in South America, a contest. And they started to hold secret tribunals, and Fargo describes these, in a group called Das Reich, the Reich, D-A-S-R-E-I-C-H, which is the real Nazi movement, and he describes Pfeiffer as only the tip of the iceberg. Das Reich was an organization that began to be formed, and again, this is right after John Kennedy was killed, to unite all the Nazis all over the world, and it began with all the servicemen who fought in World War II, and the aim of Das Reich was to set up a Nazi regime and organizations for what they called mutual aid and defense against the law in case any of them are caught, and their origins go back as early as the Nuremberg trial. The members were all war criminals who were sentenced in absentia. They were down in South America leading Nazis. They were powerful in their country, and they took refuge, and they became hotel keepers, tradesmen, farmers, industrials, worked for Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen, and took on businesses all over the world, but have one common determination, which is described as Rosh paid for the defense of Walter Rauf because their determination was to go after the Soviet Union and make war one more time. The geophysical center for the Nazisms was in Chile. Their Nazi encampment was Colonia Dignidad, and that was disguised as a cultural welfare society. And as I say, you have the list. You can get my other tapes comparing Colonia Dignidad to Jonestown and what was going on in Guyana after, of course, Burnham was put in by the CIA and the CIA place for medical experimentations and, again, gun-running, narcotics, and using human beings as a cover. Colonia Dignidad was just a children's orphanage farm, and off of there was a cultural and welfare society, which was the headquarters for Das Reich. In Europe, they were pretending to look for Martin Bormann's bones to confirm that he had, in fact, died on April the 2nd, 1945. But while they were looking for him there, it has been documented by Fargo and others who have seen him and worked with him that he was right there in South America working in a super-secret conspiracy that the South Americans called the Tercer Mondo. They envisioned, according to Fargo, a global successor to Hitler's New Order, a worldwide anti-communist coalition of reactionary forces. There are secret archives in the Coordinación Federal, I guess they're down in Argentina, of these meetings, and they were designed to unite, according to Farrago, in quotes, the darkest forces of reaction and totalitarianism everywhere, working with native fascists from South America, radical remnants of Nasser's revolution in Egypt, the neo-samurais in Japan. April the 12th, 1970, there was a biography of these men, various men, activists, propagandists in the conspiracy, a movement that began as early as 1943. And this is what Farrago says, and that fits exactly to the Kurt Riess book, The Nazis Go Underground, of Himmler and Kaltenbrunner getting together. They planned a brief period of incubation, which, as I say, ended in 52 when the money was released, when Evita died. That's when John J. McCloy, head of Chase Manhattan Bank and attorney for Nelson Rockefeller and Standard Oil, who was on the Warren Commission and hid the Nazi connections to the killing of John Kennedy. He was a U.S. commissioner to Europe and released Nazis that were in prison in 1952. The same year that McCloy was releasing the Nazis, that's when their movement began, the resurgence from 1943 to 1952, they were laying low, and the period of incubation was over. In 1969 in Argentina, there was a Congress of National Recuperation where the powers of South America and the chiefs of the National Socialist countries got together. The hierarchy of the Catholic Church was very much in collusion with this group. This is on page 443 of Aftermath. The role of the Catholic Church, and again, that goes back to the current resurgence of what is going to take place in the next war and the Nazism, with the current pope, a protege of the Pope Montini in 1970, who was part of this resurgence. By 1944, Juan Perón had been a charter member of the Nazi organization that was formed in 1943. That's 1 year before the war was over, and they were setting the groundwork for this money coming in for Evita later to go to Italy to have these passports made by the Vatican for Hitler's top Nazi. In 1955, Perón departed as head of the government in Argentina. For a while, they thought that the new colonel that became the head would not be favorable, but he began militarization of the Nazi movement called the Tachuara, T-A-C-U-A-R-A, a terrorist organization of the Nazi pattern, and terrorism began to bloom in 1955 in Chile. There was the Sturm und Drang, I'm not pronouncing it correctly, Movimiento Sacerdote para el Tercer Mundo, the formal name, the Sacred Movement for a Third World. That's the church, the Catholic Church, the violence, and this is the group that consolidated into terrorism, and that is the group that links to Venezuela, to Carlos, to the Jews that are being killed around the world, to the Entebbe Air Force, hijacking to the Japanese Red Army, the Baader-Meinhof and the Aldo murder, killing the killings in England, Jewish leaders all over the world. The Sacred Movement for the Third World became the Third Reich, and this was consolidated down in Argentina in 1955 and is a good explanation for the word Third World, because when you read in the New York Times December 24th and 25th of 1979 about the arrest of men supplying millions of dollars to the Third World, the money comes out of Skorzeny's fund or the Nazi Bormann Fund to what they call the Third World. And down in Argentina, there was the Sacred Movement for a Third World. By 1968, a Reverend Andre Canali, who was director of the Catholic Information Agency of Argentina, reported on the Sacred Movement of the Third World. And this, again, is in aftermath. 1968 was the year that Martin Luther King was killed and Robert Kennedy was killed, and their assassins were linked to Marietta, Georgia, to art galleries, gun running, narcotics traffic. The Sacred Movement for the Third World, which is the Nazi organization with the money banked in Argentina, then later into Brazil, Chile, and elsewhere, their major bases are in Spain, Belgium, Libya, Algeria, Egypt, Iraq, Jordan, Iran, Portugal, Italy, Paris, Monaco, Lucerne, Zurich, Bolivia, Peru, Venezuela. I read those countries. They're also in Taiwan, Japan, Argentina, Paraguay. The funds are from the hidden treasures of the Third Reich. Now, Farago describes these treasures, and the reason I'm going into these organizations and where they're located is because, again, it ties into the terrorists that were arrested and the countries they're funding, because remember, the few articles we got are just a tip of the iceberg. The banks for this are, at least they were when this book was written in 1974 by Farago, were in Spain, Portugal, Italy, Paris, Monaco, Lucerne, and Zurich. The men arrested as part of this Odessa group had their money. This Frank Turpel picked up all of his money from Lucerne and Zurich and took it back to Washington and set offices up in Paris in 1971, which I said on the tapes last week and the week before were part of this international network. E. Howard Hunt with the Nazi group, with G. Gordon Liddy's connections and Interpol connections, was in Spain. The banks, as 1974 identified and later are coming out, were Spain, Portugal, Italy, Paris, Monaco, Lucerne, and Zurich. And, of course, the money for Jonestown, the $26 million, was in many of these cities, also London and Panama banks, but in Switzerland and Paris. The money came from the hidden treasures of the Third Reich, started with hundreds of millions of dollars. The major bases, as identified by Farago, were in Europe, Portugal, Spain, Italy, and Belgium. The basis for the international terrorism and the rising of the Nazis. Now, we know that the Netherlands at Prince Bernhard and the Trilateral and these various cities like Tokyo and the Netherlands and London and Washington, D.C. are where the directors or the shufflers move who hand out the front political orders, the Brzezinskis and the Kissingers and the Jimmy Carters or the presidents that preceded him. But the basis for the terrorism and for the funding of world Nazism, the Third World, which is the Third Reich, Portugal, Spain, Italy, and Belgium. In Africa, they're in Libya, Algeria, and Egypt. And many times I've said that Sadat is a part of the Bormann Brotherhood, the Nazi network. The détente with Israel right now is just very temporary and shaky. Algeria, Libya, and Egypt. Asia is another area, Iraq, Jordan, and Iran. And if you think of the money going into King Hussein and the PLO and into the Shah of Iran or to Khomeini, the student group that are linked to PLO and Gaddafi and Syria, you get a picture of this multi-million, billion-dollar operation all coming together at this time. The South America headquarters for this Third Reich, Third World, are Argentina, Bolivia, Paraguay, Peru, Venezuela, and Chile was where they met. But the main headquarters bases are in Argentina, Paraguay, Bolivia, Peru, and Venezuela, and in the Far East in Taiwan and Japan, because when Chiang Kai-shek was kicked out, the headquarters are in Taiwan, a repressive government put in by the CIA, the Nazi, links to World War II, the Galen Operation. Taiwan is totally controlled as a base of operation. Germans are not conspicuous in what Farrago calls the Third World, the contour of the Third World or the Third Reich. Their heroes were Adolf Hitler, these terrorists that are, you know, doing this violence all over the world. The roots are in Nazism. But the sacred movement, what they call the sacred movement for a Third World, and under the director of the Catholic Information Agency of Argentina, the Reverend Andres Canale, the sacred movement people are very inconspicuous as being linked directly to the Nazis. They're called neo-Nazis, but their money and their framework and everything was set up by the hard-assed, I can use the word on the radio, I guess, Nazis. Fargo describes Colonel Rudel and Oscar Scarzani, who were symbols along with Bormann and Mengele's and others to keep the faith, promote Nazism around the world. And Martin Bormann was the leader of this sacred movement. He was the most prominent Nazi alive. In 1968, he joined their leadership in South America and was active in the home of Colonel Guevara. He initiated a ceremony for them resembling the rites of the Masons, which the Nazis allegedly hated. And Bormann has been very much part of getting this operation going. In the remaining time of the tape, I want to talk about another book I got for a gift from a listener during the holidays called The Bormann Receipt. The Bormann Receipt has to do with millions and millions of dollars of paintings that were taken when the Nazis looted the various countries they'd gone through, France and Holland and Austria and various countries in Europe. They had taken very valuable paintings, and one person whose family home had been raped of the artworks when she was young, she had escaped to England and the parents were killed in the concentration camps, and she put sent people out to find paintings that belonged to her family. They owned that famous painting of Botticelli's called the Florentine Lady, art collection in the family going back to the 15th century. And this book is about a chase for the art starting in 1952, where there was a storehouse. The German federal authorities had kept it earlier after the war on Meisterstrasse number 10 in Munich. There was a concentration of art and Nazi loot, classics, and then from 52 to 59 they were kept secret, and Germans began to send them to embassies all over the world. And this woman wanted to collect those family treasures, and this is a story in a novel form, but she says every bit of it is true, how they traced the Nazi mafia that killed people that wanted to find this art, and how they kept their art treasures and how the Nazis kept them. And when they wanted to find out who had the slip for these paintings, it was signed out to Reichsleiter Martin Bormann, dated June 27, 1942, that he had bought some of these family pictures and that he was buying these pictures under his name, and that he had been functioning for 27 years with billions of dollars of trade of artwork. And that Bormann, again, not only controlled the gold and the silver and the diamonds and the forged money and the regular money, the counterfeit money going after World War II, but the art treasures were sucked up by the Germans. And I'll next week go back into this book, The Bormann Receipt, because of the overlapping information that fits into Aftermath and many, many other books. There's no time here. The important thing is that the world has been literally looted and concentrated in the hands of all these various people who link to each other. And that is why we have Afghanistan and Iran and Turkey and Pakistan and India and turmoil all over the world now, is that the seeds that we planted, as I said before, are coming out And what will come will be a country, the United States of America, more bankrupt than ever, more in the hands of the control of the South American, South African, Middle East Nazis with their solid gold financial security, while our paper dollar is worth nothing and we're forced to go into a war we can't win. That'll literally bring us to our knees. The important thing about those countries, I think, is to study the past and then go back to the particular countries later. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. You take care, and we'll continue maybe next week right away with the book, The Borman Receipt.
When the money keeps rolling out, you don't keep books. You can tell you've done well by the happy, grateful looks.